You know, it's incredibly tempting to look at modern technology, especially generative AI, and just decide it's magic.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you type a prompt into this little text box, you hit enter, and like 3 seconds later, you have this beautifully formatted essay or a completely original image.
Or a fully functioning website, yeah.
Right. Lines of functioning code. And if you don't know what's going on under the hood, it genuinely feels like there has to be this, tiny, super smart human just living inside your computer.
We all fall into that trap, honestly. Humans have this really deep psychological tendency to anthropomorphize anything that mimics our behavior.
Yeah, we want to be human.
Exactly. When a system talks to us in highly fluent natural language, we instinctively assume it's thinking and reasoning and feeling just like we do. But that assumption is just a massive illusion.
And shattering that illusion is exactly what we are doing for you today. Welcome to today's deep dive. We are cutting through all the dense math and the heavy tech jargon to figure out how generative AI actually operates in the year 2026.
Because you really need to know by now.
You do. And we're using this really comprehensive framework developed by AI trainer Dinesh Tungaturi, specifically his generative AI master's curriculum, to just peek behind the curtain.
It's basically the perfect map for this kind of exploration. By 2026, you really can't afford to treat AI as this mysterious black box anymore.
No, definitely not.
I mean, multimodal AI systems that can just seamlessly process text and images and audio and video all at the same time, that isn't some premium experimental feature anymore.
Right, it's everywhere.
It is the absolute baseline. If you want to use these tools effectively, you need a functional understanding of the mechanics driving them.
Exactly. So our mission today is to show you the gears turning in the machine so you understand exactly how your inputs transform into those magical outputs. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Before a model can talk back to you, it has to learn how to, speak in the first place. And since an AI is born essentially as a blank slate with zero innate knowledge, it needs a diet. It needs data.
And we are talking about a diet on an almost incomprehensible scale here.
Like massive.
Yeah, to build these foundation models, developers feed them what Tungaturi refers to as lacks of books.
Which means hundreds of thousands of books for anyone unfamiliar with the term.
Right, hundreds of thousands of texts, along with, millions of blogs, websites, academic papers, videos, and these vast repositories of raw code. It is effectively ingesting the entire accessible internet.
But the golden rule here isn't just volume, right? It's quality.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Garbage in, garbage out. If the AI learns from high quality, clearly structured data, its eventual outputs will be accurate and coherent. But if you feed it confusing or contradictory or just deeply flawed data, the output quality completely tanks.
And that actually brings up one of the most pervasive misconceptions about the training phase.
Oh, about memorizing.
Yeah, when people hear that an AI has ingested a million books, the natural assumption is that it has simply memorized them. You tend to picture like a student cramming facts into their head the night before a massive exam, or maybe a giant searchable encyclopedia.
Right, like the exact text of Moby Dick is just sitting on a hard drive somewhere inside the neural network, waiting to be pulled up.
But that is not what is happening at all. It does not memorize. During the training phase, the AI is actually learning the underlying grammar of the content. It's mapping out the rules.
Okay, so it's looking for structure.
Exactly. It's figuring out how sentences are structured, how words connect with one another, and how the meaning of a single word shifts based entirely on its surrounding context. It learns the mechanics of a formal tone versus a casual tone, or a technical manual versus a poetry block.
Now, in the framework we're looking at, this process is compared to a human student reading books to become an expert. But honestly, I want to push back on that analogy a little bit.
Oh, how would you frame it?
Well, a human student has a highly subjective experience, right?
Sure.
If a student reads 100 books, they're going to hate some of them, love others, get totally bored by a few, and eventually they form a philosophical worldview based on their emotional reaction to the text.
That's true. Humans bring baggage.
Right. And the AI isn't doing any of that. To me, it sounds less like a student and more like a giant industrial blender.
A blender.
Yeah. It takes in all these ingredients, all the text and data, and it's not tasting the meal at all. It's just aggressively analyzing the chemical makeup of the ingredients. It's purely mechanical.
I see where you're going with the blender, but I'd argue a blender implies chaos, things just getting mashed together.
Fair
I
point.
think it's more like a highly advanced loom. It takes billions of disorganized threads of data and painstakingly weaves them into these strict mathematical patterns.
Oh, I like that better.
What's fascinating here is that you are entirely right about the lack of emotion. That mechanical, soulless processing is exactly what sets up the AI for its real superpower.
Because it's not getting distracted.
Precisely. Because it's not distracted by opinions, it dedicates 100% of its computational power to recognizing patterns.
Okay, so let's talk about those patterns. Once the machine has woven all this data together and figured out the mechanical rules of our language, how does it actually generate an original thought?
Well, to use your word, the thought isn't a thought at all. It's probability.
Just math.
The AI is constantly observing relationships in that massive web of data it processed. It learns that if a sentence begins with the words, how are, the statistically most common next word in the English language is you.
How are you?
And it maps out these relationships by the billions.
It's mapping story flow, logical sequences, even problem-solving patterns. Like if a developer sets up a specific type of coding problem in Python, the AI recognizes that the logical next line of code usually follows a very specific structural pattern.
Which brings us to the prediction process, which is the absolute core engine of how generative AI works. I cannot stress this enough. The AI does not think. It calculates.
It's basically doing math on words.
It calculates the probability of the output, word by word, or more accurately, token by token. Imagine you prompt the AI with the sentence, AI is transforming thee. The system looks at that specific context and calculates the highest probability for the next word.
So based on its training data, it weighs the options. Like, should the next word be world? Should it be industry? Should it be future?
Exactly. It picks the most mathematically suitable one based on the context of your prompt, and then it does the exact same calculation for the very next word and the next word at lightning speed.
But hold on. If this is basically just a highly advanced version of my phone's autocomplete...
Which everyone loves to hate.
Right. The thing that always guesses I want to type duck when I definitely don't. How does the AI manage to keep a cohesive logical narrative over, say, a 500-word essay? Why doesn't it completely lose the plot halfway through if it's literally just guessing one word at a time?
That is the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
And the answer lies in the deep learning architecture of these systems, specifically something called context windows.
Context windows.
Yeah. Your phone's basic autocomplete is incredibly short-sighted. It might only be looking at the last three or four words you typed to guess the next one. It has terrible short-term memory. But modern generative AI models use massive context windows.
So it's not just looking at the last word.
Far from it. The context window acts as a massive short-term memory workspace. When generating the 400th word of an essay, the model is actively looking at the original prompt you typed, plus all 399 words it has generated so far.
Oh.
Yeah, it uses that entire body of data simultaneously to weight the probability of word number 401. That's how it maintains a logical through line.
Okay, so we've moved from the theory, you know, the data and the probability, to what's actually under the hood doing the predicting. Let's look at the models themselves, the large language models, and how you, the user, actually steer this massive ship.
Large language models, or LLMs, are the heart of these systems. In the 2026 landscape, we're looking at the dominant model families. You've got the GPT series behind ChatGPT, Anthropic's Claude, Google's Gemini, and the major open weights models like Meta's Llama, Mistral, and Qwen.
And like we noted earlier, these aren't just processing text anymore.
Not at all. They are natively multimodal, processing audio, images, and video through the exact same underlying mathematical principles.
Right. And understanding how an LLM processes all that requires looking at a few specific mechanics. Let's start with tokenization. Because the AI doesn't actually read words the way we do, right?
No, it doesn't have eyes.
Right. It chops text into smaller pieces called tokens. A short word might be one token, but a long, complex word might be broken into three or four tokens.
Correct. Tokenization makes the data digestible. But the real magic happens in the next step, which is embeddings.
I struggle with this one a bit.
It's tricky. Embeddings are crucial because this is the process where the AI takes human concepts and turns them into numbers. It translates our language into a massive, multi-dimensional mathematical map so it can actually calculate those probabilities.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because I was trying to wrap my head around embeddings, and I came up with an analogy. Tell me if this works.
Hear it.
Is embedding basically like a massive library's Dewey Decimal System, But instead of organizing physical books by their genre, it organizes the actual meaning and the vibes of words.
The vibes?
Yeah. Like, it turns a word into a complex mathematical coordinate, so words with similar vibes or meanings end up physically closer together in the math.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that is a phenomenal way to visualize it. Yes, it maps meaning into mathematical space.
Mm-hmm.
So the coordinates for the concept of king and the concept of queen will be mathematically clustered really close to each other.
Okay, that makes sense.
And apple and orange will be close together, but they'd be very far away from car or airplane.
But wait, a word like bank has multiple meanings.
Uh-huh.
You know, a riverbank versus a bank account. If it's just a mathematical coordinate, how does the AI know which bank I mean?
That brings in the third crucial mechanism, the attention mechanism. Mm-hmm. This is what absolutely revolutionized AI.
Attention.
Yeah. Attention allows the model to look across that entire context window we just talked about and weigh the relevance of different words against each other.
So it's scanning the whole sentence.
Exactly. If the word bank appears in a sentence, the attention mechanism scans the surrounding text. If it sees the words water, mud, and river, it mathematically pulls the meaning of bank toward the geographical coordinate.
Oh.
But if it sees money, deposit, and vault, it pulls the meaning toward the financial coordinate.
So it's constantly shifting the context based on the surrounding data.
Constantly.
And that translation, you know, taking human intent, mapping it into mathematical coordinates, and using attention to refine the context, that is exactly why the prompt you type is so incredibly vital.
Precisely. The prompt is the steering wheel for all this math. You are giving the system its starting variables.
Right.
If you provide a broad, vague prompt like, write about AI, the mathematical space you've defined is massive. The system is just going to spit out a broad, generic, and honestly probably boring output because you haven't narrowed down the coordinates.
But if you say, write a beginner-friendly blog intro about how AI probability works using an encouraging tone,
right,
you have given the system highly specific mathematical constraints.
You've boxed it in.
Right. You've defined the tone, you've targeted the exact pattern you want it to replicate, and you've focused the attention mechanism. You control the quality of the output entirely by how well you define those starting parameters.
So we have a system that collects data, learns the grammar, maps it into mathematical embeddings, and calculates probability using context windows and attention. That's the engine.
But what does this actually look like when it's deployed in the real world?
Well, the applications are everywhere, and the framework outlines quite a few of them. We've got chatbots, obviously, ChatGPT, Gemini, and Claude holding highly complex conversations that just feel totally natural.
But then you have dedicated AI writing tools, too, platforms like Jasper or Copy.ai that marketers use every single day.
And those platforms are fascinating because they essentially act as a sophisticated wrapper around the LLM.
A wrapper?
Yeah, they take a user's rough idea and automatically apply those strict prompt constraints we just talked about, forcing the math to output structured, readable marketing copy without the user having to be a prompt engineer.
And then you apply these exact same predictive principles to visual data, and you get image generators like DALL-E or Midjourney.
Exactly.
You prompt it with a futuristic city at night with neon lights. The AI uses those mathematical embeddings to pull the visual coordinates of futuristic city and neon and generates a completely novel image, pixel by pixel, based purely on probability.
We're also seeing this completely transform software development with code generation. Tools like GitHub Copilot act as an always-on assistant for developers.
Which is wild.
It is. You can just type a plain English instruction like create a login page in HTML, and the AI predicts and generates the required code snippets, functions, and formatting right on the fly. Because code is just another language with strict grammatical rules it learned during training.
And it doesn't stop at text or visuals. Voice AI tools like Amazon Polly are predicting the natural cadence, pitch, and inflection of human speech to convert written text into incredibly natural-sounding spoken audio.
But what's really impressive are the advanced applications, you know, the kinds of things learners are actually building in Module 12, the Generative AI Master's syllabus.
Oh, yeah, getting hands-on.
We're moving way beyond simple chat into multi-step AI agents. These are systems that can break down a complex goal, use external tools, browse the web, and actually execute tasks autonomously.
And one of the most critical enterprise applications they build in that module is RAG-based document assistance. RAG, meaning Retrieval Augmented Generation.
This is a huge leap forward in making AI actually useful for businesses.
Right, because a standard LLM only knows what it was trained on. If you ask it about a private company memo from yesterday, it has no idea.
It's totally blind to it.
But with RAG, you can upload a massive database of dense private PDFs. When you ask a question, the system first searches your PDFs for the relevant paragraphs, retrieves that specific text, forcefully inserts it into the AI's context window, and essentially says, answer the user's question, but only using the information in this document.
It grounds the math in your reality. And that grounding is desperately needed because alongside all this magic, we have to talk about the severe limitations of this technology.
Yeah, we can't ignore that.
Generative AI is not perfect, not by a long shot.
No, it is not. The fundamental flaw, the catch to all this incredible math, is that AI lacks true understanding. It doesn't actually know what it's saying.
Right.
It has no concept of truth or falsehood. Mm. It only has a concept of statistical probability.
And that leads directly to hallucinations. Because the AI is just calculating the most likely next word, it can easily string together a sentence that is grammatically flawless and mathematically sound, but completely detached from reality.
It's just making things up.
It can present completely fabricated information with absolute, unshakable confidence.
Which is why human review remains absolutely essential. The AI is a tool, not a replacement for human judgment. And this ties into how these models evolve over time. They don't just stay stagnant after their initial training.
No, they're always updating.
They rely on continuous learning through updates, new training methods, and crucially, user feedback. When an AI hallucinates or gets a coding problem wrong, users correct it, and that data helps refine the model.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean? I actually want to push back on this continuous learning aspect a little bit.
Okay, let's hear it.
If the system is constantly relying on user feedback to get better, to correct its hallucinations, and to learn how to follow instructions more accurately, doesn't that mean that we, the users, are essentially acting as millions of unpaid trainers?
Oh, I see.
I mean, every time we correct a chatbot, aren't we just doing the free labor of refining a massive tech company's product for them?
This raises an important question about the modern tech ecosystem. Yes, you are part of their feedback loop. But I wouldn't call it free labor. I'd call it a trade-off.
A trade-off.
Yeah, in exchange for your corrections, you are getting access to a trillion-dollar supercomputer that can process information, write code, and generate concepts at a scale and speed that a single human couldn't fathom. It saves massive amounts of time.
But the output is still unreliable without us.
Exactly. It's a symbiotic relationship. We possess the critical thinking, the contextual awareness, the ethical boundaries, and the actual comprehension that the AI fundamentally lacks.
We are the ultimate safety net. We have to steer the ship, and we have to inspect the cargo when it arrives.
The best results only happen when humans actively guide and review the system. It is a powerful assistant, but you have to remain the manager.
So, to synthesize everything we've explored today, generative AI is not magic, and there is no tiny human in your computer.
Sadly, no.
It is an incredibly powerful, deeply complex prediction engine. It starts from zero, collects vast amounts of data, learns the underlying grammar and rules, and maps human meaning into multidimensional mathematical embeddings.
Beautifully said.
Then, using context windows and attention mechanisms, it calculates the most probable next word or pixel or line of code based entirely on the constraints of the prompt you provide. It is incredibly useful, it is multimodal, and it is entirely dependent on the data it was fed.
And at its core, it fundamentally lacks awareness. It is a brilliant mathematical mirror, simply reflecting the patterns of human data back at us.
Which leaves me with one final kind of mind-bending thought for you to mull over until our next deep dive.
Oh, love these.
We've talked extensively today about where this all starts, data collection. The AI needs to scrape the internet for high-quality, human-created data like books, blogs, and art to learn its patterns. But fast forward a few years. What happens when the internet becomes utterly saturated with AI-generated content?
That is the horizon we are rapidly approaching.
Right. If the AI is writing the blogs and coding the websites and generating the images, Won't future AI models essentially just be training on data created by other AI models?
Yeah, it's a real concern. Model collapse.
And if so, does this brilliant prediction engine eventually trap itself in a giant synthetic echo chamber? Because if you feed a photocopy into a photocopier over and over again, eventually the original image degrades. Will the original human element be completely lost in a sea of synthetic probability?
It's the ultimate stress test for the future of the technology.
Indeed it is. Keep questioning the tech, keep refining your prompts, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.